Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is a weekly investigation into the evolution of consciousness. And where we are now in 2013 owes a lot to the history that started our spiritual cycle in the 1960s. And we'll be talking about the foundations of that with tonight's guest and the great community she was a part of. Her name is Isis Aquarius, and she was part of the Source family. And there's a movie coming out that is about the foundations of really a spiritual culture in America. Wouldn't you say so, Isis?
Yes, definitely. We definitely have historical and cultural value.
So there's a movie.
Outlive us.
Right, so there's a movie coming out about the Source family, but why don't we talk about what the Source family was and then about the movie. So tell us about the Source family.
The Source family was something that was formed in the early 70s, actually, by a man named Jim Baker, who was pretty much a Hollywood legend to begin with. He had had two famous restaurants on Sunset Strip. And then he had been a disciple of Yogi Bhajan's and started his spiritual path. And he opened up this first organic health food restaurant in the country, basically, and it was called The Source. We were on Sunset, and we were very famous. Everybody who was anybody came there. We were in many movies. One of them was Alex in Wonderland with Donald Sutherland. He filmed there. And I guess the most popular was Woody Allen. That scene from the where he was on the Source patio.
Oh, really? What film was that?
Oh, my God. With Diane Keaton.
But anyway,
oh my God,
what? I think that was Annie Hall.
Yeah, but, Annie Hall. Yeah.
But what was the philosophy of the Source family?
So the Source family, we became a brotherhood, and we were the mystery teachings. And so we basically were very wealthy. We lived up in the canyon in mansions, but it wasn't that money meant anything to us. We were like the darlings of L.A., and we were pretty much left alone. And the philosophy were basically the spiritual teachings. We took, you know, we came in as hippies, flower children, and from the yogi group, but we morphed into more of a Western take off of the Eastern take of what was happening then spiritually.
But what was your teaching? What were the exact, I'm just interested, because this show is about...
Well, we took teachings from Manly P. Hall, from the yogi, and we incorporated him, and the father started channeling certain mystery school teachings, and we did things like we took sex, drugs, rock and roll, and we added spirit to them. Sex became tantra, so there was the tantra sexual practice. Our music was a universal language. Our albums were spontaneous, done in the morning hours of meditation. Drugs, we only did one hit of marijuana in the morning for meditation, and we called it the sacred herb. Stuff like
so
that.
So how many people were part of this, and was this like an open love society? Weren't you?
No, we were not an open love society. We did not have orgies. Okay. We did not have group sex.
Oh, you did.
Everything
not.
Was very honorable, and there was protocol in, you know, basically everything that we did. But within that, it was a free flow. We were a family, and I would say there's at any one time probably a good core of 200 of us at any one time. And, you know, we were a society within ourselves.
But weren't you one of the brides of the father?
Father Yod had 13 wives, and yes, I was one of them. I was also the
So tell me about
historian.
Can you talk about how you got into it, who you were? I guess you were like in your 20s in the 70s, right? And you met,
right,
tell me about your
20s.
Experience, and then we'll talk about the movie, but tell me what.
Well, my experience, basically, I had gone to D.C., and I was a White House aide under Johnson. Then I worked with Braniff Airlines, moved to New York, and got in with Andy Warhol and Salvador Dali. But I was always in a social scene. But then I heard about the hippies and flower children, and I wanted to know what was going on in L.A. So I dropped out, went to L.A., actually met Jim Baker when he had the famous Old World restaurant. But we didn't quite connect then. And then I became engaged to a famous rock and roll photographer. And I went down to the source one day because I'd heard he had opened it to get models for Jesus Christ Superstar poster. And he came out looking like Moses, and that was it. You know, I knew that that was what I had been waiting for. And I joined the source family.
And what did you, when you met him, what did you feel? What did you feel like?
When I met him at the source?
No, that you met him at the source. That's what you felt?
Well, I had known Jim Baker before the source, but when I went and re-met him at the source, he was not the Jim Baker I knew. He was being called Father, and he'd had the early grouping of the communal family happening, and he was full on into his spiritual frequency, and that's what I tapped into, and that's what I had been looking for.
And what did you feel as a young woman there?
I felt completely safe and protected and honored and alive, and like there was a purpose and a happening. But, you know, the whole 60s and 70s were all geared to that anyhow. You know, it was a spiritual crossover for many people, even from the music, you know, from the 60s.
But why did you marry him?
Whole,
why were you one of the brides?
Happening.
Why did you become a bride to the father, to Father Yud?
Because I saw him as my man. I saw him as my husband. I saw him as my link. And he saw me.
And so what was it like being married to this charismatic leader? I mean, what did you...
Well, first of all, it worked for me because the women were sisters to begin with before we were his wives. And right. It was just... we were in our own world, Alan. We had our own protocol, our own realm. And we were... basically dealing soul to soul. We weren't dealing in a lot of personality and ego because we were held together by the glue of him. Mm. And it pretty, you know, it worked.
So he was a pretty evolved being, you're saying then.
He was on his journey to becoming an evolved being, and that was very exciting because our next evolutionary path is from a human to a spiritual being. And that's what he was doing, and we were witnessing it and learning to do the same for ourselves.
And do you think that
it was the best game in town? My God, come on! It was amazing.
So your path has continued on. Since
yeah,
then.
No, I never left it, and my thread with him has never been broken. But I have an unusual thread with this whole thing. 40 years later, I was made the family historian and the archive keeper, the temple keeper, and I was a family administrator. So, you know, I basically promised him that I would save the legacy with everything I was doing in the family, you know, archiving the morning classes, taking photos, saving the music, and that's what I did. So
and
I've
so
been living within it. I haven't left
it. But that gets us to the film that was just made about the whole source family, right? I mean, this is where...
Right. Well, first of all, in 06, I did the book.
Oh, the
which
book. Actually, I have a copy of the
first
book.
First met
yes.
you in New York was because of the book.
Right. So the book came out, and then...
And then off of the book, it was natural for us to go, wait a minute, let's do a documentary. I have all this archive. I have home movies. I have everything. I have thousands of photos, diaries, and we can still get the family members to give in the now interviews. So that's what we started doing, and we've been working, you know, last few years on that.
So what
and
is the film about?
It's out
then?
Now.
What
it's out in theaters, and it's being very well received, by the way.
But what happens in the film? Is it just a kind of overview of the development of the source family, or what's really going on?
Well, the film takes is weaved very well. It's not whitewashed, and that's being appreciated and embraced. It's not just another, oh, this is a source family, you know. And no, it's Jody Willey and Maria Demopoulos, the directors and producers, did a phenomenal job. They took my home movies and more a father speaking. So throughout the film, you hear him actually speaking about things because I had the tapes, which is, you know, in itself phenomenal. And then you've got family members giving interviews, and then you see them back 40 years ago from home movies. And then we also have outsiders, people just who knew us that weren't in the family, you know.
So what do you think is the legacy of the family? I mean, how did it affect our culture and change our culture to be more what we are now?
Well, we were part of the pioneers, the forerunners of that era. So, you know, we had home births. We were doing homeschooling. We were breastfeeding. We were doing all these things that were basically illegal. You know, we had social service, when they found out we were homeschooling our kids, they started to investigate. They were going to take the kids away because we were homeschooling them. And the same with births at home. It was illegal to have a birth at home. You had to go. So just, and the green movement and organic, and I would say basically almost everything that's happening right now, we were into it or started it or introduced it, you know. And The spiritual concepts that are so much taking hold now.
Do you think that was a time like the 60s and 70s to live that way? Or you think that living communally like that is really how human beings are supposed to live?
You know, it worked for us then. I mean, people were, you know, kids were just walking out of their homes and hitchhiking to places like L.A. They would crash pad. They would just start living with people. People would just take care of each other. And that's how the communal thing happened. You know, the Shakers, there's so many people that lived communally before we did, started in the 1800s. It's not a foreign concept. But I would say it was easier in the 60s and 70s because people were more geared to doing that. It was a common thing. There was thousands of communes all throughout the United States. I heard it one time, 10,000. So it was easier to do. We're finding even today it's a very precarious thing to try to do. It's like even the source family members, we cannot go back today and live together. We have tried, several of us have tried to regroup and live more communally. It's just, I don't know why. It's hard.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Are we in a different time?
Yes, we're in a different time.
But it does seem like it's the most natural way to live.
It does, and it would save these people that are losing their farms. All they had to do is rent out a room. It's just, I don't know why people don't think of living more communally. I think maybe when we start relating more on a soul-to-soul level and spiritual mandates start becoming more a part of our life, which is going to happen with this younger generation, I think it'll start working better then. But with us, who've come in with a lot of ego and personality and lived most of our lives with a different mindset than soul-to-soul relating, I mean, we've all got a lot of residue of hooks and hang-ups that we're working out. That time in the Storrs family was a dispensation for us. But I'm telling we all went back to who we were before we came into the family. It was like we were dropped out of a spaceship or something and back here and we picked up where we left off. No steps can be skipped. We've all got stuff we've got to work through.
So you're saying after you left the family, you went back into a sort of old paradigm?
We did, because we had to start from there and work through it. Those years we were in spirit with Father. It's kind of unexplainable. I don't know.
But why couldn't you take what you learned and bring it back into the world? Or maybe
that's what we're trying to do. But we're trying to bring it back into the world as still our own hang-ups and egos and you know, personalities that we haven't really worked out or dropped with a lot of things and people.
But isn't that the point of a spiritual community, to help work and drop and work through that stuff?
Yes, it is.
And you're saying it didn't happen.
It's a lifetime. It's an incarnational journey.
Right. But it
and we were not in a communal situation for the duration of our lifetime.
Uh-huh. Is it different when people get older, right? You're in your 20s now. It's 40 years later. Is it
I'm 71, right.
Is it because of that, you think?
I don't know. It's I don't know.
Uh-huh. But anyway, because I see you're showing the film in Brooklyn, you're showing it all over, you're showing it in L.A., you're showing it at a space called Body Actualize, which I was just there last night, which is sort of
perfect.
A community in Brooklyn that a bunch of people are living together doing events. And
right. I mean, it is working. I'm not saying it's not working. Mm-hmm. I'm saying as a common concept, we're slow going into it.
Right.
I'm not saying that it's not happening and it's not working or that it shouldn't.
But after the father's source, you died, did it all sort of break up or did you guys stay together for a while after that?
We stayed together for 2 years and then it just dispersed. It was not working.
Is that because there was no leader really and he was the leader?
Right. He was the glue that held it together and it was also because it was time for us to go out and do it for ourselves and have our own path and our own family and our own lives.
Right. But what did you learn from the Source family that you were able to take back into the world?
A lot. You know, I know I do not have the fear of death. I understand the whole genre of death and passing over and the spiritual concepts of that. You know, just the whole death and birth thing, natural childbirth. My daughter was raised within the wisdom. She, you know, she gave birth to her daughter naturally, which she wouldn't have if I had not had that wisdom.
Mm.
You know, things like that. Our diet. I'm not saying that I've completely kept a vegetarian diet, but I've got the wisdom of it, and it does help keep me on track most of the time.
But what made Father Yud so special? Why was he what was so charismatic about him?
He was just the real deal in real time at the right moment for all of us.
Mm.
You know, I don't know if he appeared right now, if it would have been the same way. It was just the right timing in the 60s and 70s for all of us. And a lot of stuff that was happening back then.
I don't know if
the yogis would be, you know, where you go in and all of a sudden you got a master. I don't know if people are really embracing that concept so much anymore.
Well, I think they are, but I think the idea of a leader, one person, that I think that might be sort of over. I think that's
finished. Well, yeah, it served its purpose, and you know, that's one thing Father said. He goes, there's going to be no more middleman. You're going to have your direct connection, and that's what we're heading towards. You know, is that
right.
concept
so,
that you have to have somebody else help you get there. Well, you kind of do, but not so dependent.
The name of the film is The Source Family, God Has a Rock Band. Is that the whole...
No, that's just a tagline for the poster.
I'm looking at the poster. So you're having a big showing at the IFC Theater here in New York on May 1st, and then you're having an opening screening in L.A. What day is that?
May 9th.
Oh, so it opens here in New York first, then.
Right, that it will be the premiere. And then just nationwide. It's in all over the country.
And are you going to be touring with the film?
No, I'm going to be doing New York, San Francisco, L.A., and then, you know, hitting places like Portland, Seattle, because it's kind of like right there. But I don't have any plans to do any place else. L.A. is home ground for us, you know, so definitely L.A.
Mm-hmm. So are the other wives of Father Yud still around?
Everybody's around except one. There was one of the wives has passed over.
And did they all have children with Father Yud?
No, just three of them. He had three children.
Did you have children with him?
No, I did not.
Oh, you did not.
No. Actually, I had my child after he left the body, and then I was with one of the source family brothers.
Oh, I see. So this was a real foundation. And so by watching this film, what do you think people will come away with from that?
Oh, my God, Alan. It amazes me what people come away with. You know, we usually do a Q&A after each one, and it's just amazing what people share with us and ask.
Like what kind of stuff?
Anything and everything. It's just nothing off the top of my head comes forth. I mean, people do have made remarks of they really loved understanding a little bit more about a different aspect of the 60s and 70s. It's helped them kind of understand things in a way that maybe they haven't for some reason. Some people have said it changed their lives. Now, that you would have to ask them because I don't know what that really means, how it could change somebody's life. But I think... I don't know. It's a powerful film, and when you see it, you'll understand what I'm saying. It affects people in different ways. We have virtually have received no negativity on it. A little bit of negativity on it, but it's like it's so small that it's like it doesn't even matter. You know, some people can't get past him having 13 wives. They thought he was on an ego trip.
But he wasn't. You're saying he had transcended his ego, aren't you?
Well, keeping 13 wives together where everybody was happy and there was no discord, you can't be too much in your ego to do something. It has to be the real deal.
But when you say he had 13 wives, you're saying he had sex with these 13 women. I mean, is that part of, I guess, marriage?
Yes. There was no problems. We were all very happy and well taken care of.
I mean, it's all fine. I'm not judging. I'm just saying, was that part of the marriage? Is that he would just and would there be a certain schedule, or would it just be whoever?
No schedule. It was just it was a natural flow.
And were some of the wives together?
Was it personal and private?
He was with each wife privately. You're saying.
Right. We didn't have orgies or group sex or anything like that. It was
I'm just curious.
And, you know, it's not like we had to have sex all the time. It was a very fulfilling experience and lifestyle.
And how long did how long did the family last? So they began in, early 70,
Well, he opened the Source Restaurant in 69, and the family basically started around 71. And then he left the body in 75, and then we dispersed in 77. So it's a good 7-8 years.
So it was a solid, and there was about a solid 200 people part of this?
There was, yes, that I would say is a core. There were times where we had more than 200.
And did you all live together, like 200
yes,
people?
Yes, we did.
Where did 200 people live together?
Well, we're very orientally inclined, where we, had to roll up beds or paddings where we slept on the floor, very oriental concept.
Was it one house that all these people were living in?
Yeah, but we had huge mansions.
So
we had
200
the Chandler
people
mansion,
living in a huge mansion.
By the LA Times guy. I mean, it had 3 floors. I mean, everybody had their space.
What you're saying, so there were about 200 people living in one big mansion?
Yeah, and it worked. It was great.
Uh-huh.
We were all on the same schedule. We were all on the same frequency. We all had the same protocol. We all had the same goals. It was like we moved as one.
Uh-huh.
And it was awesome.
It sounds pretty amazing. So
it's almost something like unless you were there or have experienced something like that, it's really hard to explain.
Well, but now there's the movie. That's the purpose of the movie.
Oh, the movie does get a lot across, I'm telling you.
So the movie is almost as if you're almost there. Or would you say
You will be there because you're hearing his voice in real time through the tapes. You're seeing home movies, you're seeing photos, and you're hearing people in the now talk about it.
Well, I'm excited then. I'm excited about seeing this because I felt like I always missed the 60s. You know, I was too young.
Well, this is just so right up your alley with everything you're doing anyhow.
Right. No, this is very exciting. So if people want to come to the New York premiere, they come May 1st, they should go to the ifccenter.com.
And if I would suggest if they really want to come to get tickets because we hear it is selling out fast.
So if they want to also see it in San Francisco or in L.A., where is there a principal website for
them? Well, they do have a website on Facebook called the Source Family Documentary. And I do have another website called the SourceDoc.com, which I think they're pretty much keeping up with the schedule.
Well, it sounds amazing. I am looking forward to seeing it. Can I come to the Harlem showing that's happening, Dinner with the Source Family?
Sure, yeah, we'll talk. No, I want to see you again and spend some time, so I'm going to call you.
All right, you call me when you come to New York. Congratulations, because I mean, congratulations on you, for you, because you're the one that kept the history of the family alive, and without you, there wouldn't be this film, would there?
No, I've been working on it, for the last 13 years with everything. So it's like,
So if
but,
people
you know, you can't
want
ever do anything
to
alone,
see
so.
What the 60s were about, you know, the kind of now it's sort of legendary in a way, you know, Woodstock, the Woodstock generation, the hippies, the birth of, and I think it was a birth of a spiritual awakening in America.
Oh, absolutely. So. Alan, don't ever question that, because I'm telling you, a portal opened and we all walked through it. And that it happened.
And we're living out of that portal that we all walked through back then.
We're
now.
We're living this out of the residue of that frequency for sure. And I'm feeling another cycle coming around again, and this next generation's feeling it. They're feeling something just like we did in the 60s and 70s. I talk to these young kids all the time, and they go, wow, you sound like I did in the 60s and 70s. It's like, but it's on their own level and timing and in their own way. You know, there are never going to be another 60s and 70s, but there will be, but it'll be in their way.
Yeah, I'm curious about how that will show up, because the doorway
it's
to
already
the
showing up. I'm telling you, I've been touring for years now with the book, and the last year doing the film circuit with the documentary, and I'm hearing it from everywhere I go across the country from this younger generation. It's already starting, and they know it too.
How is it looking different?
Well, the difference is, with the internet right now, it's kind of like it's the new Library of Alexandria. Everything's at their fingertips instantly. And there is really no more middleman for them, you know.
So,
they
get
it, they assimilate it, and they go out and do
has made the whole world smaller. I mean, it has made...
Yeah.
I mean, it's now not just like these pockets of families or collectives. It's like the whole planet is now...
Exactly.
Totally one family. It is the family.
Yeah, I mean, we said that in the 60s. We're all one, blah, blah, blah. But we really are all one. We're just each our own thread that will complete the tapestry of this incarnation by the time it's done. But we really are all one, and we are all connected.
And that's really comes through in the movie, doesn't it?
It does, yes.
Well, it's very exciting. I mean, after talking to you, I'm more excited about seeing the film, actually, than now that we've talked. And congratulations again.
Well, thank you, Alan. That means a lot to me. Thanks.
Yeah, so why don't we then just stay in touch?
Oh, we will immediately after this call. I'll send you some info.
All right, send me
about
11. I'm just doing a... Another another part
to this.
In the next
couple of days, I'll make sure you have what you want.
All right, great. And then I'll get some tickets, and then I'll post this interview online as well. And we'll just
let me know how I can listen to it also and share it.
Mm-hmm. I will. It'll be on BBS Radio, and it'll be on It'll be on my website as well. So thank you, Isis Aquarius. One more time, give us the website.
Which one? Well, there's yahoa.org, which is our website, Y-A-H-O-W-H-A. And then anything to do with the documentary, the film, is on Facebook at the Source Family Documentary, or their link is the sourcedoc.com.
Great. Great. Thank you so much. Thanks for
You're
reaching
welcome.
Out. Thanks for connecting me, because I like to track the cultural movements and the roots and the historic perspectives that, in a way, this program is a part of, and an outgrowth of those things that began in the 60s and 70s. So thank you for being a guest
tonight. You're welcome. Aloha.
All right. Aloha to you, Isis Aquarius.
Bye.
Bye. Well, switching gears here now, but along these lines of kind of world communities, my next guest is Heather Canton, who's with the World Genesis Foundation. Heather, are you there? Hello, Heather. Are we with Heather? Do you hear me there? Don.
Yes, Heather should be with us. I do not know why she's not.
I don't hear her, but should we call her back? Or one second. So the World Genesis Foundation will be talking to Heather Canton about that, and that is it works with
Heather is with us now.
Oh. Okay, good. Heather, you can explain the World Genesis Foundation.
Can you hear me, Alan?
I can. Thanks for being here today.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me tonight.
Of course.
It's great to be here.
Well, I think you're doing really important work with the World Genesis Foundation, and I was just about to explain it, but I think you can explain it much better than I can. So why don't you just give us an overview of what the World Genesis Foundation wants to create and what it is.
Okay, wonderful. Well, the World Genesis Foundation was founded in 1999, and it started with just a notion, a seed, and a dream, and it came together with the idea that there were a lot of youth that had unmet needs, and these unmet needs really kept them from a lot of opportunities. So with that, the World Genesis was born, and the mission of the foundation is to leave no child without hope for the future, and our focus is educational programs in areas around the world where youth have very limited opportunity or no opportunity at all.
Well, but your focus sort of in Romania was my feeling about it, or is it everywhere on the planet?
Well, we are one of the thoughts that we put on our website is there's really one world with no borders. So that being in mind, and the fact that we are the World Genesis Foundation, our focus is really across the world. We do have some major projects, one of them that does take place in Romania that we've been a part of for a long time, but we're actually doing projects with other wonderful organizations and partners that bring us all over the world.
So tell me then, because it was a little general, how does the organization operate? What do they do? I mean, how do they know where to target? And what are some of the projects you're doing? So talk about what are the day-to-day functions, in a sense, of the World Genesis Foundation? I mean, I know you want to educate underprivileged children, but,
right.
I mean, how do you go about that?
Right. It sounds like a huge undertaking, doesn't it?
It does. So I want to know more specifics.
More specifically, well, we are a 501c3 not-for-profit organization, and we actually work in cooperation with the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization. So that's UNESCO, in short. And we also have a lot of other partners throughout the world in creating new opportunities. So what we do is we find partners that are like-hearted, like-minded in their missions, and or partners that have strengths that we can work with our strengths, to create programs in different parts of the world. So, for an example, you spoke about Romania and Atlantacron, and this is a project we've been involved in since the 90s. This program brings about 400 youth from around the world together on an island, along with experts and professors and teachers together, and we immerse ourselves in education for a 10-day to 12-day academy. So this is one program that we've been involved in, and we bring everything from the sciences to the arts to cultural awareness to sports and bring all these things together in one place where it becomes really a platform of interdisciplinary learning, multidisciplinary learning, and we really rediscover education, that it's not that we have to tear down the walls of education like we hear a lot about today, but it's really remembering that we live outside of those walls as well.
We live outside the walls of institutional education, you're saying? So you create different types of learning environments? Is that what you were mean?
Exactly. You know, remembering that, you know, the world is part of that education. It's not just confined to the walls in classrooms. So a lot of our education that we do is more in a non-formal sense. So, for example, Atlantacron Academy, which takes place in the middle of the Danube River on an island. So we're completely immersed in the natural environment there. Interacting with nature as much as it's interacting with us, and still having these educational opportunities that come up in what I call these learning moments that happen. And a lot of that happens outside of the classroom. Mm-hmm. So
when is the next really one important. Happening this summer, right?
Yes, we are actually having our 24th annual edition of the Academy that will be happening this summer, early August. Usually happens in early August. So if anybody is interested in that, of course, they can visit the official site or visit on the worldgenesis.org webpage.
Is that the official site, the worldgenesis.org website?
The World Genesis Foundation, the worldgenesis.org is our official website. We have links to it to all our projects, and Atlantacron Summer Academy is one of those projects, so people can learn more through there or learn more about the other projects we're involved in as well.
Well, what are some of the other projects? Can you mention a few?
Sure. One of the ones that is really exciting to talk about is one called Jumpstart. This is a program that we partnered with UNESCO Center for Peace and a few years ago and began together because we had an aligned mission of really creating opportunity in addition to jump-starting other not-for-profit organizations in their missions that were very similar to ours. So the Jumpstart program helps accelerate the success mission of HOPE by delivering professional internet solutions for other not-for-profit organizations. So we have students that work under the guidance of professionals as well as university professors in different locations. And the great thing is that a lot of these youth would not get to work on these real-life projects, you know, as they're improving and getting ready for their careers and tackling these projects, building their professional self as well. And so we give them the opportunity to work on these websites that give them the opportunity to work on live projects. In addition, it also is win for the not-for-profit organizations who might not be able to have that virtual presence otherwise. And it helps accelerate their mission as well, along with the, you know, support and everything else that goes along with that. So it is an amazing program that we do, and we do that in partnership with UNESCO Center for Peace.
So, but you were saying it is such a massive undertaking to help the under privileged children of the planet? That's really sort of your mission? I mean...
Yeah, well, our mission is to leave no child without hope for the future. And of course, that is a mouthful, as well as it is an armful as well. But you know what, Alan, I think it's, you know, when you meet people and you connect with people and you work with people, it's one heart at a time. It's one person at a time. So, and that's where the real difference happens. You know, it's in the small things that the big things really take bloom.
Yeah, but how do you, I mean, you're the president, or are you the, what is your official position there?
I'm the president of the foundation. Yes, I was appointed president in 2011. I actually started the foundation as an art instructor at one of the programs.
Oh, really? I see. And then now
yes.
You're the president?
Yes. Isn't that fascinating?
That's huge.
People,
that's a huge undertaking.
People ask me that all the time and say, you know, what brought you to the World Genesis Foundation? What prompted you to get involved with it? And I laugh because I say, you know, it was just a series of insignificant events. And then I laugh at that because it's funny when you get further away from these things and you take a step back and you look at all the small choices that you've made, you can see the events that were not small and they were not insignificant at all. And they brought you to this point. And it's interesting because I had a friend that was very connected, and I come from an educational background. I'm a teacher and a social worker, and I specialize in creative arts therapy. So I worked in the educational field for several years, and when this project was just proposed to me, I was just very piqued in interest. I was very intrigued, and so decided just to go to participate. I volunteered teaching an art program, and that was in 2006, and here I am today.
I'd love to actually participate and share some of the ideas about art and creativity and science that I've been investigating with new realities. How would I go about becoming a part of that program?
In getting involved in the
yes,
programs,
and
specifically in the art?
Atlanticron or something like that. Is that possible?
Mm-hmm. Well, anybody can that's interested in participating, including yourself, are welcome to visit the site, welcome to visit the atlanticron.org site, and I can spell that if you'd like for your listeners.
Yes.
Send a message, write a proposal, tell the coordinators what you're interested in doing. The World Genesis Foundation is just one of just a landslide of volunteers, of people that are interested, of members of the team. I mean, this truly is a mission of heart where people come together that are like-minded, that just want to create an opportunity and the chance to give back and the chance to share so much talent and knowledge that's out there. So, you know, I'm just a small piece in it all, but truly anybody that's interested, you know, we love the opportunity, and there's many opportunities that come along in addition to Atlanticron. So just, you know, send us a message and a proposal and jump on board.
Well, how do you spell Atlanticron?
It is atlantycron.org. And we're also on Facebook as well. So,
is it too late to apply for this August that's coming up?
No, typically registration, there'll be an announcement and typically registration will open up quite soon. Everything's coming together, the wheels are turning and people are coming out and things are building. So, you know, we have a lot of exciting things this year. We've had a lot of amazing guests in the past, everyone from Ed Bell Bruno to Colin Andrews to some interviews that we had with NASA and the landing of Mars Curiosity last year that happened around the time of the Academy. Mm. And the list goes on, and I just encourage everyone to visit the site, learn more about what it's about, its history, and jump on board and join in, and it's exciting.
So these are, 2-hour lectures? I'm looking on your site, the main programs, or are they whole day events, or how does that work at AtlantiCon?
Yeah, it really depends on what you're bringing and what you want to offer and how that fits into the entire program. Usually that there's a theme that emerges every year, and everything from the sciences to the arts and the cultures and the dance program and the sports program, and even a lot of what the speakers bring are around that theme. So that theme will be out there. You can already find it on Facebook. If you put in AtlantiCron, you can join the group, and things are listed on there. And there's a lot of opportunities. So it really depends on, everything that you want to do and coordinating it all, really.
Right. So you don't have the dates yet for this August. Do you have a date? Because I'm not seeing that on the website.
Yeah, the dates usually typically happen in the beginning of August. They will be announced officially on the site as well. Because the we are on an island, weather is really becomes an important part of it. And so typically it happens at the end of July to beginning of August.
Do you go every year yourself? Are you part of that?
I have been, I started off as an instructor in 2006, and now I am one of the organizers, of course, World Genesis Foundation, and everyone in the board and on our team, just a great team that's behind all this, all come together and participate in their own ways and own capacities. But I've been fortunate to be able to be there the last few years, and so I'm going to try to do that as long as I can.
So how long will you be president? Is that like an elected position? I mean, how did you actually get to, from starting out as an instructor, did you just were very excited about it, or what was your process?
You know what, and that's a really good question, Alan. You know, why did I get involved in World Genesis? What brought me to it? I really got involved because I believed in the mission, and I believed in the people that, and the team that I work with that brings so much heart and so much passion to that work. And, that's what it's about. It's finding something that you're passionate about. I'm passionate about education. I'm passionate about creating opportunity. It's weaved itself throughout all my work in all the, the arts that I do, in everything that I do. So I think the message is find something that you're passionate about and do it.
Right, but still,
and I started
how
off as a I started off as a volunteer, and I just got more and more involved, just starting putting more of my, more of everything that I could into it. So, fortunately, with that, I was elected to be nominated, and luckily for me, I was voted in. So I'm going to do the best job that I can until somebody else comes along that's going to be better for the position and give a new face and a new light and a fresh edge to everything. So.
But is this your full-time job? Because I saw you also do other things, right? I mean, or is this a full-time job?
To be honest with you, it's full-time in my heart, and I do as much as I can, and we are all volunteer. So actually, I'm still teaching. I actually am an art professor here in Arizona, and
you teach
I also
art,
have a business.
Art history or art or painting or...?
I teach all sorts of arts, but each year it kind of changes depending on the energy of things. And so this year I was teaching a class, a couple different classes, everything from I'm really interested in the fiber arts. So this year we did bookmaking and we did drawing with your right mind, which sounds really funny, but it's a very interesting course in exercising right and left brain and utilizing different parts of your brain. that we don't normally exercise on a day-to-day basis. So I'm teaching two courses in that, and I also run a small business, and that blends sort of science and astronomy and astrology with gemstones and crystals, and then I also do the work for the foundation. So I stay pretty busy, Alan. Keeps me out of trouble.
You're in Tucson? You're in Arizona somewhere?
I'm in Arizona, yes. Mm-hmm.
Right, so that, so you stay very busy with all this activity. So what is
I
mean, so Atlantacron, the Romanian project with these youths, is that, would you say, one of the major programs of the World Genesis Foundation, or are there other programs equally as big?
Yeah, I hear you. And, you know, Atlantacron is a big program that we've been a part of for many, many years, but we actually have programs that take us all over the world. We have several projects that we work with in partnership with UNESCO Center for Peace. And so we do programs, now doing programs in and out of the U.S. as well. The Jumpstart program has taken us with organizations and partners from in Africa, in Thailand, in Asia, in, of course, Eastern Europe, and then also the Americas, too.
Right, because if they're saying no child left behind, there's children everywhere that are being
you got it.
left behind, really, that need to be.
That's right.
So would you say the key to education is the practicality of learning, not, I mean, getting them out of a classroom and more like looking at the world around them, I suppose, is one way of seeing it, right?
Yeah, you know, I think that education is changing. I believe that there's a shift happening and a refining in the education, and it's important to ask the questions about, you know, in this 21st century, when we have 21st century learners, or what's called digital learners, you know, what is the purpose of education now, and what's the definition of knowledge, and how should education be structured or not structured to fit the needs of our youth today, especially in a world where they live in that they really experience things with the totality of their environment, which is so much different than generations prior. So
what are the answers?
I think that all those are new
questions. What are the answers to those questions? How can we restructure education within a digital internet age that will be more, accelerate? I mean, I think, you know, when I grew up, maybe we were watching television. We weren't interacting. The internet and the computer has made us much more active and participatory in the media that we produce. And that's what's really exciting. And I think it creates a new mindset among children in their development to be more creative, because they have more input. They're not just sitting in front of although a lot of them still are, sitting in front of a machine that's talking to them. We're interacting with each other around the world. So I think that leads to a new type of thinking. Have you seen the different developments are based on those new awarenesses?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, look at just education today that has changed. I mean, the online universities that take place and the global learning that takes place, even within the classroom. I mean, students are able to connect with students all over the world in different subjects. And the great thing is that students today aren't just learning from one point perspective, but they're learning from multiple perspectives, which is amazing today in the world that they live in, because it is so fast-paced, and we are, you know, being bombarded with information from all different points of view. So to be able to learn from different points of perspectives and different points of view can a lot of times allow you to have these moments of being able to have these moments together where you are inspired, where you are innovative, where you're problem solving, where you're, you know, becoming critical thinkers, but not just doing that from one point perspective, but from multiple perspectives. And I think that's key for our youth today, you know, going, and they will be our leaders of tomorrow and facing a lot of these questions that you're asking that, you know, I certainly don't say that I have all the answers to. I think these are good questions for us to get together and start with conversations like this, Alan, where we start connecting about these things, where we start talking about these things, when we start looking at these things from multiple perspectives.
Well, no, but you're teaching children now, right? How old are the children you're teaching?
Well, I work in teaching children around the world at, in different programs. So it ranges in age from, you know, very young children to older adults.
Right. So
the youth is primarily what World Genesis Foundation is. I work with a lot of adults in the universities.
But are you seeing a difference now in this generation that's changed since, you know, I don't know how long you've been doing this, but, you know, since you began? Are kids different? I guess I'm asking that from, you know, the younger generation.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I don't know how they could not be different. I mean, if you think about it, we're trying to prepare our youth for a future that we can't imagine. And I don't say that figuratively. I say that, you know, very directly. We literally can't imagine. So the iPads and the cell phones and this of today, because technology itself is accelerating at such a pace, is not the world that will be in existence 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now. So it's really a different world. And so, you know, children today are experiencing that world with the totality of their entire environment that we, you know, that younger generations just didn't experience. You know, I came across a really cute story the other day, and I thought, wow, that kind of says it right there, the way that that youth are experiencing, you know, the world and what they will experience. And there was a child who had been exposed to, was given a book or a magazine, and she just kept trying to shoo the page as if you were on a Kindle or as if you were on an iPad or a virtual magazine, and all you had to do was move your finger. And you know, that the fact that she wasn't aware how to turn the page of a real book or a real magazine. I mean, that to me is fascinating.
But
that our, the children,
our,
the
our
youth.
Children. No, that is interesting. But are children thinking differently?
Oh, sure.
You know?
In my opinion, children have to think differently. I mean, the amount of social media and everything that's out there, it is much different than in generations before. So, in traveling around the world and being in different cultures and different, you know, parts of the world, you can see a different mentality, a different way of thinking with kids that are exposed on a daily basis, on a moment-to-moment basis, versus youth that are not. Absolutely.
No, I understand that. I mean, in wrapping up, sort of, what do you want people to really know or come away with about the work, about, you know, what we need collectively? I mean, the World Genesis Foundation is really something that's there for everyone.
Absolutely. You know, and Alan, first I just want to thank you so much for having me on tonight, for having a space that we can, you know, share these thoughts and ideas. And there are so many ways to get involved at World Genesis Foundation. First, you know, come visit the website, worldgenesis.org. You can volunteer time, you can volunteer materials, you can make a donation. You can click on the Hope Mart heart, which is at the bottom of our homepage. And if you shop on Amazon, simply shop every day. You know, Amazon's one of the biggest places that people go. A portion, if you click on that heart before you do that, a portion will be donated to educational programs through Rural Genesis Foundation. So there are so many ways to get involved, no matter, no matter what and how much time that you have. So we welcome volunteers. We welcome guests. We're growing every day. Our reach gets larger. And that's what it's about, connecting with people one heart at a time, one mind at a time. And we also just invite your listeners to join us on Facebook at World Genesis. And it doesn't cost anything just to share and extend the mission and our reach. So I just want to thank you, Alan, for having me tonight.
Well, thank you so much you are dedicated to the planet, and that's sort of why I guess you were chosen to be the president, because you are so dedicated. All right. Well, thank you so much, Heather, for being a guest on New Realities.
It's my pleasure, Alan, and I hope that we get a chance to chat again. It's been wonderful, and I thank everyone out there.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Well, I'll talk to you soon. Maybe I'll call you later or this week, and we can chat about that, okay?
Wonderful. Okay. Wish everyone a pleasant night. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Heather. Don, are you still there? Don at BBS?
This is Doug. Yes, I'm here with you.
Oh, Doug. Oh, I was going to just bring in one more guest.
Sure.
Should I add her?
Sure.
Or do you want to?
Sure, you can add her, or you can give me her number. Or...
this is a Skype call.
Your connection is good. Your sound is good, so
okay,
I think you can do it.
I want to just add to call. Let me see. All right, I'm going to try calling her. This is Carrie Cassidy from the Camelot Project.
Wonderful.
And she's putting on a big conference coming up in 2 weeks. Carrie, are you there?
Hi there.
Hi, you're on BBS Radio. Welcome. I was just giving a little background that you're doing a huge conference. It's going to be a beautiful gathering of people, the Awaken the Aware conference based on time travel in other worlds. You want to just give a little overview and some other things that people might want to know about it?
Sure, absolutely. Well, first of all, they should know that I'm Carrie Cassidy from Project Camelot. So if they don't know Project Camelot, that would be a good place to start, because we're producing the conference. And in many ways, these are whistleblowers and people that I've interviewed in the past, some of whom I have never interviewed, though, such as Bashar, although I know you've interviewed him,
correct? I've interviewed him a few times, and he is a brilliant source of consciousness. I'm sure he'll have a lot to say about this topic of time travel. Yes.
Yeah, that should be a lot of fun. And
yes.
What I wanted to do is kind of mix it up and have, go at time travel from a little, from a few different directions. And so that's really what we've got. We've got scientists. We've got Richard C. Hoagland, who's going to be revealing stuff about time travel that he's never talked about, actually. And some insider information that he has, and that's going to be really fascinating. In fact, we're actually doing a live stream. It's a conference, what I call Camelot Roundtable, on Thursday night this week, which is kind of a teaser for the actual conference. So anyone who might be thinking of going to the conference might want to try to listen to that.
Oh yeah, how could they find that? Give me the...
Okay. Well, again, it's projectcamelot.org or projectcamelotportal.com. Both of them go to the same place, or projectcamelot.tv. And so Camelot is just like King Arthur's Camelot. And I'm an investigative reporter and documentary filmmaker. We've got over 300 hours of audio and video footage, interviews with whistleblowers from above top secret, as well as authors and contactees. Let me see. I've got a radio show as well, Alan.
Tell us where your radio show is and how, and on the roundtable, who's going to be on this week's roundtable?
Okay, yeah. It's going to be, actually, let me tell you the topic as well. The topic is the election, you know, the recent coronation of Pope Francis, the Jesuit connection, and the future of planet Earth. So it's a rather heavy topic, but we've got Richard C. Hoagland, who's going to be giving some hints about what he's going to release at the conference. So he'll be on board. I have a very interesting guy named Jay Dyer, who some people may be familiar with. You can just look at, I think his, it's called Jay Dyer or something. Oh, Jay is Jay's Analysis. I think he calls his website.com or something like that. But at any rate, he's a fascinating guy, and he's written and done a lot of investigation in regard to the popes, the Vatican, the Jesuits, and that whole, you know, the whole background, Malachi Martin, the whole prophecy thing.
Right.
So we're going to have him on there. We've got Douglas Dietrich, who he was a researcher who was in the, basically in the bowels of the Presidio in San Francisco for years, and was also taught by an occult magician called Michael Aquino that some people may know of. And so that he comes at it from a whole different direction. Very, very interesting guy. And then we're going to have Jordan Maxwell, who's
I love fabulous. Jordan. He's a brilliant thinker, Jordan.
Yeah. And he's basically very well grounded in the cult symbolism, you know, what's going on behind the scenes in the Vatican, et cetera. So it's really going to be a power packed, Thursday night, I have to say. I'm just sort of blown away by myself by the group of people we're going to have on there.
Wait, so where can we can find that on? It'll be broadcast on Project Camelot.
Yeah, the way it works is we use Skype and live stream, although it depends. But we do have a Project Camelot live stream channel. What you do is you go to projectcamelot.org. You're going to see the big banner ad for the event. First of all, you'll also see an Awake and Aware 2013 ad there. And we urge you to click over to, let me say the conference website for, this is April 5th, 6th, and 7th. So that's, awakeandaware2013.net. And so you just spell out the words awakeandaware2013.net. And that tells you all the speakers we're going to have at the conference and basically the topics and some of their background, et cetera. But the Thursday night, you can basically go from Project Camelot to Awake and Aware and back again. If you want information on the Thursday night, it's on my blog as well, which is on the front page of Project Camelot. So you'll see the banner ad, but you can also scroll down to my blog. We will have a place where we're selling tickets for the Thursday night, which will be very cheap. Basically the cost of a movie ticket, $12 for non-members and half price for what are Camelot members. And you can be a subscriber if you're interested. And that banner is on there as well in case you become, you know, and you decide when you want to get half price on all the future events as well. So we've just got a lot of jam-packed things.
Oh, it sounds really great. I just want to just review some of the other speakers that are coming to the Awaken Aware show that's happening on April 5th, 6th, and 7th will be Preston Nichols, who is really the person to come forward and talk about the Montauk experiment, that time travel experiment that the government created that connected with the Philadelphia experiment using Tesla technology. Also, Sean David Martin will be there talking about time travel in Area 51. David Wilcox, who's a very well-known author and whistleblower and I would say visionary and seer into future possibilities. So all these people coming together in California, in Glendale, at the NBC Suites will make a very exciting, you know, time for anyone who wants to show up there, really.
Yeah, and we're going to have whistleblowers in attendance. There's also Henry Deacon, who came out under his real name, Arthur Neumann, who worked at Livermore Labs as a scientist and in time travel. Actually, he has claimed that he's been to Mars, working on Mars in an underground base. So he's a fascinating individual. He will be at the conference as well speaking. I have to say that, you know, this is really a not to be missed event.
Right. How are things going well? I'm sure they are. Right?
Well, I mean, we're getting the word out slowly but surely. It is interesting. I mean, we have also, let me say that Anthony Sanchez and George Green, I mean, we haven't even mentioned all the speakers.
Right.
It's just going to be very, very fun. Let me say, yeah, things are going well. We haven't sold out, so we still need to sell more tickets.
Well, we will sell out. I mean, we'll do, you know what. But I just want to say, for people who don't understand the concept of whistleblowers, it means that really Project Camelot and Carrie Cassidy and all the work she's been doing have been talking to people that are giving us a different perspective on what the government's really about with secret UFO projects, you know, all these black projects that are whispered about. Carrie goes in and talks to these people and exposes subjects and ideas that are kept out of the mainstream media, that mainstream won't touch because it's outside of our belief system, the mainstream belief system, outside their worldview. And we are basically kept dumbed down because we are left unaware of the possibilities that our science and our consciousness is capable of. So Carrie comes in and talks to these people and opens up huge fields of knowledge with your work. With this, so I want to thank you for doing that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, Alan. Yes, it's been a fascinating journey, and I have to say that we will also have some surprises at the conference, because I can tell you that just because of the nature of the kind of work we do, people tend to gravitate towards us. There will be, no doubt, there will be a lot of intelligence agents in the crowd. we'll be having late night discussions with some of the attendees. I already know that Jordan Maxwell will be there. He will be probably on our speaker panel, mm-hmm. even though we don't have time for him to speak, and his expertise is not really time travel, but he will be there in attendance, and Michael Schratt, who is an expert on aviation, and that means, you know, various aerospace craft and UFOs and so on, a really incredible researcher, mm-hmm. will be there. George Green will be talking about the financial system, so not everything will be about time travel. We're going to have, you know, sort of some other things, as well as Stephen D. Kelly, who will be talking about underground bases. In fact, he talks about the underground base at the Getty.
I see. That at the Getty Museum in L.A.?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize there was an underground base there.
Well, most people don't. So he is a fascinating guy himself. And you know, all of these people are worth the ticket price. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I mean, these people is fascinating to spend the evening listening to.
No, I totally agree. Why don't we pick up the conversation next week? I could interview you on next week's program about, you know, the scope of Project Camelot, how you got into it, what you've learned, what's been the most exciting thing that was a revelation to you in your years of research. Does that sound good?
Absolutely. I can talk about some of the latest whistleblower information I'm getting, which is really gangbuster stuff. And, you know, at my conference, by the way, I will be speaking if there's time, although at the moment it's looking kind of dicey. And by the way, Alan is going to be our MC. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you mentioned that.
No, I was going to mention that, but yes, thank you for mentioning it. I usually leave. I always usually forget about myself, but yes, I'm happy. I'm really excited about being there because I think this is history in the making.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's very exciting. It's a very exciting time. And I can tell you already, I have a mysterious letter that I received.
That's fun. About what?
Somebody who says they're going to show up and they want to speak. And, you know, I basically have no room for them, but they apparently have some information about time travel. So
are they a time traveler that's showing up there?
You know, really, I don't know yet.
Okay.
This is the kind of thing that goes on. So I, you know, I encourage people to be there. By the way, our Friday night is a meet and greet party. It's always very popular, and we probably will have some celebrities on in attendance there. So just for people that like that kind of thing, there are celebrities that are into this sector and various things. So I heard that Russell Crowe, for example, just shot a UFO with using his iPhone.
That's right, in Australia. Yes, there's a lot of celebrities into this. So
we're going to see what we get. And I'm actually at this time looking for a celebrity to do a keynote. I put an invitation out, as a matter of fact, to Shirley MacLaine. We'll see if she's interested. But that's basically where we're at.
Well, I told you I knew Dee Wallace, who's very interested in this work. And she was the mother in the E.T. movie that Spielberg
did. Yes, absolutely. Please do invite her on our behalf. The celebrities are invited to attend the entire conference as well.
Great. Well, this is exciting. So is next week at 7 p.m. your time good, next Tuesday?
Yes, that looks fine at the moment, and that would be great.
Okay, so we'll pick the conversation up there. And this is the Awake and Aware Show 2013, Time Travels in Other Worlds, being produced by Kerry Cassidy of the Project Camelot. And the website for tickets is awakeandaware2013.net, right?
That's correct.
All right. I'm excited. And I will see you soon, but we'll talk next week.
Lovely.
Thanks, Kerry.
All right. Thank you so much, Alan.
Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. That was quite a bunch of interesting people on the line tonight. If you want to hear copies, you can go to the BBS archives. You can also go to my website, newrealities.com. And if you have any questions, you can always email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And I welcome comments and ideas and possibilities. But I will be in California emceeing this amazing gathering of speakers that will include Bashar, Henry Deacon, Preston Nichols, Richard Hoagland, Sean David Morton, David Wilcox, Anthony Sanchez, Nick Herbert. And I'm very excited about that. So maybe I'll see you there. Say hello. Thanks for listening. And tune in next week. Thanks.